with us, all of you, but especially some high school students that we have here with us. I would like to introduce to the court Baraboo High School students. Would they please stand? Thank you for coming. You may be seated. We also have students from Madison West High School. Would they stand, please? And thank you for coming. You may be seated. The students are here with a national award-winning program sponsored by this court and the State Bar of Wisconsin. High school students across the state are invited to join us for an oral argument. If the invitation is accepted, the students are given briefs of the case that they are going to hear, and they may engage in the various activities relating to that case. They come, listen to oral argument, and then after the second oral argument, they meet with a justice of the court. The discussion during that session is about the procedures of the court in accepting and deciding cases, not the substantive issue of the case that we have heard. And everyone is invited to join the students with the justice. Before I introduce the justices, if anyone would like a summary of the case that we're about to hear, if you'd raise your hand, the marshal will give you a summary. It's easier to understand a case if you have a familiarity with the facts and the issue. Let me now introduce the court to all of you. Seated to my right is Justice John Wilcox. He is the justice with whom you are going to meet at noon. And to his right is Justice Patrick Crooks, and on the far right, Justice Patience Rogensack. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice, and to my immediate left is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, and to her left, Justice David Prosser, and on the far left, Justice Lewis Butler. With those introductions made, I'll call our first case today, which is 2005 AP 2998, State of Wisconsin ex-rail Brian Buswell versus Toma Area School District. Arguing on behalf of Brian Buswell is Jack D. Buswell. Mr. Buswell?
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Jack Buswell. My law firm is Arndt Buswell and Thorne, and my client is Brian Buswell. Our passion for this case comes not from a dispute on how a school district hires coaches. The passion for this case comes from the promise of the open meetings law that government in Wisconsin should be open, transparent, and honest. We're here today to have that promise fulfilled. We're here to ask this court to overrule the holding of State XREL HD Enterprises 2 versus City of Stoughton and to remand this case to the trial court for proceedings consistent with your opinion. The holding of HD Enterprises has reduced the legal analysis to a comparison between whether a specific notice is less or more specific to a word, and that word is licenses. Lost is an inquiry on whether the notice in question fulfills the goals of the open meetings law. Is a notice reasonably likely to apprise the public of the affairs of government? A reasonable notice furthers the goal of creating an informed electorate through the disclosure of the fullest and most complete information concerning the affairs of government compatible with the affairs of government. If the notice fails in accomplishing that goal, then the notice violates the open meetings law. One thing I want to emphasize today, our position is that not every issue under every agenda item need be noticed. We believe the reasonableness standard announced by Judge Vergeron in her dissent in HD Enterprises, as applied to the facts of our case, would have required the following. The June 1st, 2000 agenda would have noticed the deliberation and ratification of the TEA contract and the new hiring procedure for coaches. The June 15, 2004 notice would have noticed the adoption and consideration of the new procedure for hiring coaches.
Counselor? Does that limit, and I understand the background of this is basically that there were some groups that were concerned about how coaches were hired in the community. Now, there are literally thousands and thousands of notices that go out each year. My question to you is, in looking at, in the light of this, would a reasonable person, and this seems to be some of the argument of opposing counsel, understood that they were going to take up, because it's the TEA, the Tomah Educational Association, and their contractual dealings with people who were going to work for them, they say it was reasonable, and you're saying it was not under even the test given by Bergeron's dissent.
Yes, Your Honor.
So the point I'm asking is that you're asking us to overrule the HD case and to impose the and to impose a reasonable standard. The opposition said this was reasonable. What more notice would you have needed? You said what you wanted. Why wasn't what they gave reasonable?
Well, if you look at the specific language of the June, let's talk about the June 4th notice.
Sure.
Okay. Specific language says contemplated closed session for consideration and or action concerning employment / negotiations with district personnel pursuant to WIS Stats 19.85 sub 1 sub C. Our complaint with that language is that it's so broad that it really doesn't give notice of anything. I would like to direct your attention to...
I'd like to talk to you about that for a moment. It does talk about employment. It does talk about negotiations. It talks about district personnel. It refers to 1C, which is looks to me as if it might be individuals, whereas 1E talks about collective bargaining. So if I were looking at this and reading the statute books, I would not think a collective bargaining agreement was on it. I mean, that's just on the face of it. It might be, but I'm not sure. Looks to me that it has to do with personnel. Was that open or closed?
I'm sorry?
Was it an open or closed announcement? That it was an announcement of an open or closed meeting?
It was an announcement of a closed meeting.
Okay. Which makes it look like it's a particular individual, although collective bargaining is also closed when it deals with negotiation. All right. So you think, as I heard you, that it should have referred directly to TEA contract, right? As does the third issue in your brief, notice of a TEA employee contract approval.
Yes, Your Honor.
So had it said that, you'd have a less good case, maybe. You agree with that?
I agree. Okay.
If I can follow up on the Chief's question, let's say the notice is worded as is, and I'm speaking specifically with reference to the MTE contract. The TEA contract.
Okay.
Let's say the notice reads exactly as is, but instead of saying 1985 1C, it says 1E. Would that be sufficient notice?
Are you referring to the June 1st?
The June 1st, and only with respect to the TEA master contract.
No, it would not be sufficient notice. I think in the briefs it's been argued by the Attorney General, and I think it's a good point, that even in closed sessions there may be even a stronger requirement for a specific notice, because then that notice can be evaluated by the public to see if the exemption that the governmental body is using to close the session is proper. Also, they cannot vote in closed session. They have to come out of closed session to vote on whatever they've deliberated on in or discussed in closed session. That gives the public the opportunity to attend and possibly give input on the decision that they might make regarding the subject matter in closed session. So I would say to you, no, that notice is not sufficient.
Counselor, were there other new provisions in the TEA contract aside from the method of hiring coaches?
Not that we were aware of. Mind you, the procedural status is that this is a motion for judgment on the pleadings, so there's been no discovery. Mm-hmm. So there may be others. We don't know yet.
Was the June 15th meeting that was an open meeting at that point, was it also an open mic so there could have been public input or not?
My read, the only two documents to answer that question would be the agenda itself and the minutes, and I don't think either of them answer that question. There is, in the beginning of that meeting, I think they call it communication with the public. It's one of the first agenda items on the June 15th agenda. It's not related to the other subject matter later on when they talk about TEA contract. So maybe they had public input, maybe they didn't. We don't know.
Your real point here, if I understand it from your brief and from what oral argument you have, is that the notice of June 1 and the notice of June 15 had to have reference to the hiring of the coach.
Yes,
you'd
ma'am.
Be here even if all the notices said TEA collective bargaining agreement. That wouldn't be satisfactory for you. Isn't that right?
Correct, yes.
Well, suppose that there were other, I mean, there are obviously more provisions than the coach, right? So even if they're precisely the same as the old contract, that's still of interest to the public, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And if they're different, either in increased salary, increased benefits, decreased workload, whatever the work conditions are, that's of interest to the public.
Yes.
So why pick out coaches? I know that there's public interest in this. I know that there was a committee. I know there was public concern about the committee. But why select that anyway? I mean, isn't there anything else that the public was interested in the Tomah School District?
I'm sure there is. I don't know.
One hopes there is.
Oh, yeah. I'm certain there is. I mean, part of my in anticipating kind of your question, I was thinking if you do overrule HD Enterprises and you do send it back to the trial court for other proceedings, what are you going to tell the trial court, and how is the trial court going to analyze the case? And if I could give you an example.
That's really the kicker here.
Yeah.
What is the standard? What are the criteria to gauge agendas or notices, right? That's
right.
The standard. Okay. You tell us. What's the standard in HD? That may be a good way to start.
Well, the standard in HD is that you only have to give notice of the subject matter generally of the notice.
Licenses is good enough.
There's no analysis reading 19.84 sub 2 with 19.81 sub 1 regarding whether that notice is reasonable such that it accomplishes the goal of 19.81, which is to create an informed electorate and give them the fullest and most complete information regarding the affairs of government. So to get back about how a trial judge might analyze a case if you do send that back, let's talk about school districts and master contracts. I think the trial judge first, if I were the judge, I never will be, but if I were, I would try to identify the public interest involved first. And at least with local government, I can't think of a greater public interest than the education of children. The other public interest with regards to master contracts would be, of course, the taxpayer. And so I think a trial judge would answer or could analyze this case in identifying the public interest to say, if there's changes in that master contract that are going to impact the taxpayer, or if there's changes in that master contract that are going to impact the way public education is delivered to children, then the public ought to know about it, and that a specific notice of those changes ought to be given. Now, I understand that this is going to result in a more specific agenda, a longer agenda. But it's going to happen once every 2 years. And I think if we strike the balance should be struck in favor of more or less notice. And to place the burden on a school district to once every 2 years to create that more specific notice, I think is fair. I think
it only happens once every 2 years for the school district as to the collective bargaining agreement, but it happens, how often does the school board meet in Toma?
At least once a month.
That's right. So every month they've got to put out a notice.
Right.
So every month they face the issue of how detailed or how general can that notice be, right?
Right.
So as to school matters, I mean, as to collective bargaining, you could have an opinion that says, list anything new, list anything over X amount of bucks, you know. But this case is broader than the school board, as HD was. So what do you do then?
I think you go through the same analysis. You identify the affairs of the government that the public has an interest in, and you ask your question, ask the question, should the public be entitled to a specific notice?
So who does, so each, and I think that's what the Chief Justice is asking, we look at, we're trying to consider what's reasonable within the capacity of each municipality, each school board, each town board, village board, etc. This is going to affect, it's going to affect everybody. And I certainly sympathize with your, we want open meetings, we want notice to the public. The question is just how is that done? One of the, or maybe both of the amicus briefs get into the fact that, look, are they going to have to consult with legal counsel each time that they meet? What burden is this going to place on all of these governmental entities? Is it reasonable, is it reasonable here, and that argument is that, well, look, if you knew that there was going to be this subject, was it reasonable for people to attend? Specific notice, and as the Chief points out, is very difficult because you have, I know my father sat on a school board many years ago, and there are hundreds and hundreds of different items that come up over a year or so, and I'm sure that's true. So how do you want us to, and I think that's what I'm interested in, how do you think we could accomplish that from our standpoint? What should we say?
I understand the concern about creating a test that is going to be unworkable, that may be too much of a burden for governmental bodies. I think maybe if you take a step back, that maybe that might be misplaced. And I would argue that every lawyer in this room, if a governmental body came to them and asked them, what kind of notice should we give? I think everyone in this room would say the kitchen sink. And the reason they would say that, and what the Attorney,
well, yes,
the Attorney General says in its compliance guide, the best notice. And I guess
a better phrase
would say, give the best notice you can, the most specific notice you can to avoid something like
and
this.
And if you did that and an item came up, and I guess that's where I'm getting at, and you know, these aren't all you don't prepare for everything. So so that would inhibit, if it's not, if it isn't there in the kitchen sink, so to speak, then would they couldn't bring it up. They'd have to wait until the next meeting, which is probably all right. But it's a, and there's the, well, I'm just saying, well, it's the kitchen sink and you publish this. I don't know if it's published in the Toma Times or if there is such, Tacoma Times, but or tacked up on the telephone post or how the public gets their notice. But I'm just wondering the length, what is expected. And what is expected, really, you're saying, is what is reasonable. And we go back to that. But the kitchen sink seems, to me, might be burdensome to everybody. And then you'd have to worry about omission. What did you omit? Because that would be the expectation. If you didn't have it specifically, you couldn't talk about it.
The Attorney General's compliance guide, and in fact, a number of the Attorney General's opinions talk about that the agenda should be prepared to give the best notice possible at the time the agenda is prepared. They've also advised that for items that come up after the agenda is prepared, where they could not have come up on the agenda, other notices in there like agenda revisions or miscellaneous business or general topics like that are sufficient to handle those situations. But where a presiding officer
is... You wouldn't have been satisfied if this came up under miscellaneous business, would you?
Well, the Attorney General also recommends that if it's a matter of wide public importance, and we think this is, the better practice is to adjourn the meeting, give a specific notice, and hear the matter at a different time. And I think that's a wise avenue to take.
What about what I would consider a more modest approach? It seems to me that you start your analysis with identifying what the interests may be. And the interests, you indicate, are interests of education of children and interests of taxpayers. Well, that's awfully broad, it seems to me, or can be. It's hard to get a handle on. One of the tests offered is where members of the presiding office know of specific items in advance of the meeting, specific notice should be given. My concern is coming up with a workable test, and my concern, and more than just that, too, you know, but as a threshold, look, if the officers know there's been some interest in an issue, that should be listed. My concern is you have a contract which has multiple items involved in it, and what is the requirement? List all of them? If not, list all of them. Then what is the threshold? How do you discern what is to be listed?
I know one thing for certain. When they adopt a new hiring policy that isn't part of any previous master contract, that is certainly one thing that should be noticed. On the other issues, you know, the record isn't quite developed enough to be able to tell you, and I can't tell you, and I don't have enough knowledge about master contracts in general, and this master contract in specific, as to whether that is a real concern, whether from year to year those contracts do change in such a significant matter that there's a myriad of notices that you would have to give. My gut feeling is that I don't think that's the case, that from year to year there's a few things to change, but not very many. Do I know that? Can I point anything in the record to you to confirm that? I can't. And so it's hard for me to allay your concerns about, well, are we creating more of a problem than we're solving here? I do know if we go back to the facts of this case, when you've got an issue that does have clear public interest, such as this athletic policy in general and hiring coaches in specific in the Tacoma Area School District, that deserved a specific notice. The public deserved to know about that. And we think the open meetings laws should require that.
Ask you, Mr. Buswell. You started your presentation speaking of your passion for open meetings, but what is it you really hope to come out of this case? I mean, you want it to go back. I mean, what is the relief you're seeking other than sort of general principle?
I think it's more of what Justice Babelich said when he was talking. It was another context in Badke when he was talking about mootness. And he was talking about, and the other party was saying that well, we'll just go re-notice this correctly, have the meeting, vote for it, boom, it's done. And no harm, no foul. I think the problem, or the reason we're here, is that we think the process was flawed. And if we can correct that process and have a correct notice and have a correct meeting, and possibly if the school board does want input, they don't have to take input, but they can state our case. And in that instance, if they vote to go with the same policy, then so be it. The process is correct. The process complies with the open meetings law.
What about forfeitures and fines? And isn't the collective agreement already in effect? Maybe it's over. I mean, case takes a while to get through the courts, even in our very good system. But the collective bargaining agreement is generally a couple of years, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So isn't that agreement gone and we're in another agreement already? I mean, I just didn't check it carefully.
That's very possible. This was adopted June of 2004.
And June of 2006 is already gone.
Yeah, they may have adopted another agreement.
Yeah, but there are, as Justice Prosser is, I think, getting at, collateral or other consequences. So one, maybe the collective bargaining agreement is not valid at all. I don't know what that means. There are attorney fees you can get. There are forfeitures. There are various remedies provided in the statutes. And you didn't talk about that. Now, various briefs talk about retroactive application. Should we reinterpret HD or overturn HD? So, because there are other government institutions involved. So what's your position on your remedy?
I think that's the remedy of going back or
yeah,
whether the issue of retroactivity?
Everything.
Okay.
Retroactivity, forfeitures, attorney fees, the whole shebang.
Let's talk about retroactivity first. I think that argument's overstated. I don't believe that there is a huge pool of deficient notices out there. I think when a governmental body wants information about what kind of notice that they should give, they consult with the attorney or they go to the attorney general's compliance guide, and the advice they're going to get is give the best notice you can. And so I think the fear of that you are going to create litigation and have people filing actions trying to invalidate governmental actions going back 2 years, I think that's greatly overstated. On the remedies, when we go back, we can certainly get attorney's fees. We can have, hopefully, we can have the action adopting the hiring policy for coaches voided. We hope to have...
Counselor, in that regard, have there been any coaches hired under this policy who would then not have been lawfully hired?
I don't know the answer to the question. Since it was adopted?
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question.
Isn't that a consideration that should be looked at or not? We were talking about remedy. It may affect third parties that are not before us. I guess that's what I'm asking you about.
Right. How would that impact the coach that was hired under the policy they mm-hmm.
They have in the contract, right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't know the answer to that either.
Well, but everybody here just says send it back to the circuit court. Let them figure it out.
Well, yeah, you could
really
do that.
That's really all the briefs say, that none of them say what they're supposed to do. I mean, you say remand it. The attorney general says send it back to the circuit court to make for further proceedings under the correct legal standard. I mean, I think that's, if I were writing the brief, that's what I would say, too.
To give a better answer to you, Justice Rogensack, I would assume that person that was hired under the new policy has a contract and a written contract that would be binding upon the school district. So Do I know that? No. But I would think there would be minimal impact to coaches that are already hired.
You're here for a principal.
Yes. Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Chief, if I might.
Justice Butler.
Mr. Buswell, I note that the school board's amicus brief and the WEAC amicus brief reference Chapter 111 and its applicability. On neither party, and I'm going to ask the same question as opposing counsel, neither party has argued the impact of Section 19.86 with respect to notice of collective bargaining negotiations and the applicable notice required under that section of the statute with respect to the master contract. And I'm wondering what, if any, applicability that statute has to this case in your argument.
Thank you. I can't see any applicability. You know, there's an argument in the School Board Association's brief that the June 1st meeting was a collective bargaining session, and therefore the open meetings law does not apply. We'd urge you to reject that position. The reason we urge you to reject it is because the notice was a notice of not a bargaining unit. The notice was for the entire school board, and also the union wasn't present. I think what happened on June 1st is they were there to ratify an agreement, and that's what they did. The agreement was already struck. So I'm not sure exactly where you're going with the 1986 argument.
Let me ask it, and then you can think about this and perhaps deal with it in your rebuttal. Rebuttal. But as I read the statute, it says, notwithstanding 1982 sub 1, where notice has been given to either party of a collective bargaining agreement under Chapter 111 to reopen such agreement at an expiration date, the employer shall give notice of such contract reopening as provided in 1984-1B. And I guess the implication of my question is, does that require more specific notice that we're dealing with collective bargaining, that subsection of the statute, or does it just simply, this is not applicable to this case? That's the import of the question. Does it require more than just, as the notice in this case indicates, consideration and or action concerning employment and negotiations with district personnel? That's the import of the question. You can think about that and deal with it on the rebuttal.
See, my time's up. I'll answer that on rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Justice.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Buswell.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Lori M. Lubinsky, representing the Natoma Area School District.
May it please the Court, my name is Lori Lubinsky of the Axley-Brennelson Law Firm, representing the Natoma Area School District. We believe that notice of the general topics of discussion at a government meeting is proper under 19.84 sub 2. We believe that detailed agendas are not required, that the legislature did not require it as such, that the legislature has had every opportunity to change the statute in the face of the very case that appears to be the subject of the petitioner's argument, HD Enterprises, and has chosen not to. We believe the case law as developed under 19.84 sub 2 has clearly provided a workable and reasonable framework for local towns, villages, school boards to conduct their business in a manner consistent with the open meetings law, yet also consistent with Chapter 111 of the Wisconsin statutes.
Let me ask you in this case, because as one reads the petitioner's brief, there was this coaching interest. There was a committee. There were concerns. If that was ever to come up, would it mean that the people that were interested would have to attend every school board meeting where they were going to talk about contracts or TEA things? What would the public expect in this case?
What the public should expect with respect to bargaining over a coaching procedure is by knowing the framework of bargaining in the context of Chapter 111 and what's open and what's not. We know that under Section 19.85 sub 3, exchange of initial bargaining proposals is open. We know that under Section, 19.85 sub 3, under 19.851E, we know that final ratification is open. We also know that everything in between is closed. We know from the amicus briefs, the very helpful amicus briefs, that it's actually a prohibited practice to demand an open session. We know it's a hiring procedures is a mandatory subject of bargaining. We know that the WIAA rules say if you're going to follow our rules, you should have a procedure, not necessarily.
WIAA.
I'm sorry?
It's WIAA.
Wisconsin Interscholastic
Athletic Association.
I don't know that.
We know that those.
Oh, that. Okay. Go ahead.
We know that those rules say that if a school district is going to hire a non-teacher, you must conclude, school, that you don't have any available or acceptable teachers.
Let me, if I may.
Please.
I want to know, what is the least notice that you think is acceptable?
I don't. Go ahead.
I couldn't tell you. Personnel matters. That's all that's said. Is that good enough? Isn't that as good as license?
It depends on what's discussed.
I'm telling you. Exactly in this case, for the closed session, personnel matters.
Are you referring to the June 1 meeting?
Pardon me?
Are you referring to the June 1 agenda?
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just say district personnel, if you like. Good enough?
If your question is if all the June 1st agenda said is negotiation with district personnel and that's it, is that your question?
That's it. And I'd even go further and say just district personnel matters or district personnel employment. Just as good as licenses. It doesn't tell me whether it's liquor or daycare or whatever. So what's the matter with that?
I believe that would be sufficient under the law, Your Honor.
That's what I thought you'd say. You'd have to say that.
Yes, I believe it would.
And the same thing, now let's take the other one. Would district personnel be good enough for June 15th? That's where you're going to approve the bargaining contract. Just district personnel.
Would there be, in your hypothetical, would there be an absence of indication?
It's the exact same facts as this case. I've changed the notice from TEA employee contract approval to district personnel.
Under HD Enterprises, that would be sufficient, Your Honor.
That's what I thought you'd have to say. So your position is not only is this sufficient, it's overly sufficient. It's not even necessary. All that the notice that the school board had to do for the TEA contract was say personnel. And that's good enough under HD.
Yes.
Okay.
What about the argument that you exist because of me, you know, because I'm the public, because I'm a mother of high school students in Wausau, Wisconsin. And because I'm interested whether or not my kids are playing basketball. In fact, I've been getting phone calls every other night from interested parents. I mean, this is a hot issue, and you can envision that. And it's so hot that a group of us send a letter, as was done in this case, set forth in the exhibit, page 27 of the appendix, plaintiff, send a letter and say, hey, we, the undersigned concerned citizens of the school district, wish to state our opposition to changing the current teacher union contract in regards to placing coaching positions under the teacher's union contract. Lots of people sign. I mean, there's something to me that's unacceptable. If I have a group of people that are vitally interested in an action of my government, and I let my government know that I'm vitally interested in this, and that I would get a notice that says, working off the chief's hypothetical, district personnel, and that lets me know. I mean, you're my government. You're working there for me, right? So I think I would be outraged because I'm interested in this, and I let you know that I'm interested in this. And you don't have to listen to me. You don't have to agree with me, but at least let me know what you're doing on the issue. How do you respond to that? That kind of, that approach that just put yourselves in the shoes of the soccer mom, so to speak.
Of the Toma Sports Booster Club.
Yeah. Yeah.
My response is twofold. Number one, if every phone call or every letter to a village board member, a city official, a school board member, signed by 16 people, was enough to require under the open records law that we detail specifically subtopics, then we are going to create agendas.
Let me stop you there, because I agree with you. But the answer to my inquiry of, you know, how do you deal with this, the sky is falling. You know, do we have to give every sentence? Do we have to give every movement? Oh, this is going to burden government? I agree with that. And that's not workable. So this is your opportunity. This is your opportunity to give me, because I'm not just a soccer mom, I'm a justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, to give me something that's workable in between this district personnel that tells me nothing about what I'm interested in, not only what I'm interested in, what I've written to you about, and we have a petition about, nothing, and the sky is falling, which is unworkable. Give me something that is workable, that this court can accept, not only for the Toma School District, but for every municipality and entity under open records law.
My response, Your Honor, is that in this case, a policy contained within a collective bargaining agreement addressing a mandatory subject of bargaining is well within the general topic of the collective bargaining agreement itself.
Well, can you articulate a standard? I mean, by what you're saying district personnel is sufficient, and I'm telling you, if I were in their shoes, it isn't sufficient. So if you want to persuade me, you got to give me something else. Maybe you aren't interested in persuading me, but I am one of seven.
I'm certainly interested in persuading you. In terms of answering your question on a workable framework, I think the legislature set that standard. When the legislature said in 19.84 sub 2 that the notice must be reasonable to apprise the public or the media of the subject matter.
That's right. But my concern is we must need a little more definition to that because and defining reasonably. Otherwise, we get, you think district personnel is sufficient. That is, it reasonably apprises me. And I tell you that from my perspective, it doesn't tell me anything, especially about a topic that I've petitioned you about. So how can we come together on this?
My first response is we've got more in this case. Cook v. Cook says this court is a policy-making court, not an error-correcting court. Not before you today is whether you want to reverse HD Enterprises. You may very well want to.
Why isn't that before us?
Because the facts of this case, as you articulated, Justice Abramson, are not HD Enterprises. In HD Enterprises, it was licenses. Here we have Toma Education Association contract approval. We don't have
contract. Not in the first one.
Let's talk about the first one. In the first one, we have bear with me.
Before we talk about that, the real issue is the trial court here and the Court of Appeals here use the standard in HD. So all they had to say was, does it fit the standard of HD? And HD says licenses is enough. Therefore, personnel is enough. Therefore, these are good notices. That's it. They don't have to say, is it more than required and does that fit a different standard? So HD is before us because in a motion to dismiss, they're applying a legal standard, taking the facts alleged as true. Isn't that what happened here?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So that's what's before us. So the question is, did the trial court apply the right legal standard? And the legal standard is HD, licenses enough, and the here, district personnel would be enough, as you would say. Question for this court, is that satisfactory? I mean, we don't have to go any further and look at these notices.
I would like to look further and look at the June 1 notice, because it doesn't just say district personnel. It says negotiation with district personnel.
Okay.
And negotiation.
So if you were going to fire me and I was not under the teachers' union contract, you probably would negotiate with me, too, because I'll tell you I'm going to sue. Okay. It's I know. Just go very quickly. Don't bother to come back. That's a joke.
All right. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Well, there's always a first for everything. Thank you all for leaving, evacuating the building as we were required to do, and returning. Now, where we were, as best I remember, is you were applying HD, and if you applied HD, just personnel or district personnel was sufficient. You were then saying that the notice was good anyway. And I assume that would be if you applied a higher standard than HD. And Justice Bradley asked you what that standard would be if you were going to apply a higher standard than HD, and then would you satisfy it? Okay, and that's where I think we left off.
Okay, thank you. If you are going to reverse HD and you are going to apply a higher standard, in HD, for example, that higher standard should be governed by 19.84 sub 2, which requires a notice reasonably likely to apprise the public and the media of the subject matter. If the subject matter in HD was Pick and Save's liquor license, then perhaps under your new standard, that notice should have indicated that there would be a liquor license discussed. You would need to go further and reverse State Ex Rel Chev v. Van Lair to require that that notice include a specific mention to Pick and Save's liquor license. Chev stands for the proposition that you need not identify the person that is the subject of the particular action. And so to answer more specifically Justice Bradley's question, in HD, it would be liquor licenses. If you want to reverse Chev, it would be Pick and Save's liquor license. How does that apply to our case? Under that standard.
What standard?
The standard under 19.82 requiring.
Reasonably likely to apprise the public. Okay.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Of the subject matter of the meeting. I think we can all agree that the notice for the June 15th meeting with respect to the teachers' TOMA Education Association contract approval is sufficient. There is nothing in any of the case law or in the statute itself that requires specific notice of subtopics under the general subject matter of the meeting. What was the subject of that meeting? One of the subjects was approval of the collective bargaining agreement. That was duly noticed. Now, Justice Abramson has talked a bit about the June 1st agenda, in which the agenda reads contemplated closed session for consideration and or action concerning employment / negotiations with district personnel pursuant to 19.851C. I will concede that the reference to 19.851C is in error. That should have been a reference to 19.851E with respect to collective bargaining. Olson, a Court of Appeals decision 2002, said had an error in the notice, and the court said the notice need not be correct in every detail. If you are going to create a standard whereby if a town, village, school board puts the wrong exemption down, I would argue to you that you are going to be creating a standard that is setting local government up to fail.
Well, I could understand if that June 1 notice said TEA contract and then referred to 1C. I mean, you're on notice that it's a TEA contract. You've got a little problem because you're also on notice that it's not a TEA contract. But there's enough out there to make you worry, and if you're interested in a TEA contract or if you're interested in a personnel matter, you'd go. I mean, substantial compliance is generally the rule, not absolute compliance. The problem with that June 1 is it doesn't refer to collective bargaining in its words. And then refers to a statute that's not collective bargaining, so you have nothing about TEA there.
You do have the words negotiation with district personnel.
No,
and personnel's plural, it's not singular. You can look and actually compare the June 15th notice to see how they specifically identify an individual contract. And they use very different language with respect to an individual. I would also argue.
No, this is the public we're talking about. We're not talking about lawyers. We're talking about the public.
And the public's.
And a reasonably knowledgeable public. I'm not talking about anyone picked off the street. You have to have some reasonable knowledge.
And a public is going to have reasonable knowledge that they're not even going to be able to attend the June 1st meeting. They're going to know that because you're talking about employment / negotiations with district personnel. So the need for more specific notice.
Not whether I'm going to attend. It's that I know what the devil you're doing. That's the point of the notice. Otherwise, there would be no notice of any closed meeting because I can't attend.
And I would argue, Your Honor, that the notice that was given gave the public ample notice to know that that the school board was going to meet and that they were going to talk about an employment or negotiations with district personnel. I think in the context of the other notice that you have, it's clear that the public knew that that the district was negotiating with the TEA.
Who drafts these notices?
In this particular case, it was the district administrator and or his or her assistant.
Mm-hmm. Do they have
That's
a lawyer
on the record. I should be clear, however.
Could you give
Do they have a lawyer on the staff?
No, the school district does not have a lawyer on staff.
But has a lawyer hired.
Yeah.
Okay.
The school district has general counsel with whom they consult with respect to matters that they deem it appropriate.
In the notice for the June 1 meeting, give me a policy argument why there should not have been reference to a specific labor organization with whom negotiations were underway.
Two reasons, Your Honor. First, this is a school board with teachers, all of whom are a member of the Toma Education Association. There's no need to reference TEA because that's the collective bargaining agent for the teachers. Second, there is a reference to negotiations with district personnel. So there is at least public notice that they're going to be talking in closed session about negotiations with certain district personnel. That should satisfy the requirement in 19.84 sub 2 to give reasonable notice of the subject matter of the meeting.
Counsel, let me ask you the same question I asked opposing counsel with respect to 19.86. Does this apply under this set of circumstances? And if it does, does this section of the statute suggest that you have to have more, that it has to refer to collective bargaining agreement when giving the notice under 1984-1B?
I don't believe it does, Your Honor. 19.86 provides that where notice of one of the two parties to a collective bargaining agreement, where one of the two parties want to reopen that agreement after its expiration date, then the notice must comply with 1984-1B. This was not a situation where we had a party to the contract reopening an old contract. We have negotiation over a new contract.
This isn't a contract that expired, that now they're going to renegotiate?
There's a distinction between reopening an existing contract and renegotiating a new contract. This was the renegotiation of a new contract.
All right.
My follow-up to your answer is in the June 15 notice, the specific reference in 7C is to TEA employee contract approval. But then you have point 8, which is, I believe, virtually identical, if not identical, to the provision in the earlier. I don't think it is self-evident that the language in the June 1 notice applies only or exclusively to TEA negotiations.
I would agree with you. The language as drafted in the June 1 notice would not exclusively apply only to negotiation with the TEA contract. I will agree with you on that.
Was anything else discussed at that meeting?
No. You have as page, bear with me, 20. I apologize. The answer is yes. You have at page 29 of the appendix the meeting for that closed session on June 1, and as you'll see, there was discussion about both high school principal applicants as well as the TEA contract. So both were discussed, and I do concede that both, that the notice would be proper for consideration of both.
Well, it seems to me, maybe I'm being obtuse here, but I didn't really hear a policy reason why we shouldn't have at least, or why we couldn't at least say, you know, name the specific organizations.
You could certainly require that in a collective bargaining sense, government officials must therefore notify, when you're talking about negotiation, notify the collective bargaining agent for the other side. I would argue that that's not what's required under 19.84. The legislature set the standard. The standard is reasonably likely to apprise the public of the subject matter. To go in and for this court to say, well, for collective bargaining, we're going to mandate that you reference the agent with whom you're negotiating. In my mind, legislates rather than determines how to interpret that statute. What may be reasonable in terms of the subject matter of a contract may be to identify, for example, that you are negotiating a collective bargaining agreement. But to go further and state that you're negotiating with a specific agent or entity, I think goes above and beyond what the statute calls for. Yes?
I'm going to ask Justice Prosser's question in a slightly different way, if I'm right about it. I can understand saying, well, we're not going to put anything about the coach because we also have, pick another topic, heads of the departments or whatever. And we don't know where to start and stop on the details. But what would the reason be for not explicitly stating TEA contract or TEA collective bargaining? You know that's what it's going to be. It's very broad. It doesn't tie you up. You can talk about anything on the TEA. Now, maybe you couldn't talk about the principles under that, but then maybe you have to put TEA and principle or whatever. Why wouldn't, I mean, this is another way of stating what Justice Prosser is asking you, why wouldn't, under good government, under reasonably likely to apprise the public of the subject matter, why wouldn't you put TEA? It's not a secret. It's obvious to the district administrator who's making up the agenda. You know, he's not going to be blindsided. Why wouldn't you put it in?
I don't know the subjective intent of...
No, I'm not asking subjective intent because this is really objectively. Mm-hmm. What is reasonably likely to apprise the public? That's what the district administrator says. I want to serve the people of Toma. What's likely to apprise them of the subject matter? Why wouldn't you put TEA? That's in essence what you're asking.
The answer to your question is, it is self-evident. It's not all that hard to write TEA contracts.
That's right.
I concede that. Okay. Absolutely.
We require that?
The question is whether the law requires that.
And what is reasonably likely to apprise the public of the subject matter of the TEA contract? What is reasonably likely?
I believe that the words negotiation with district personnel is reasonably likely to do that, Your Honor.
You believe that if you just had district personnel, that's reasonably likely?
Under HD, yes.
Yeah. And you think HD is the proper interpretation of the statute?
I believe that HD, as applied to this case, clearly allows for the court to conclude that our notice is proper.
You think that HD, that if the standard was higher than HD, you'd fit it anyway. That's
correct.
Your position.
Correct.
If I understand it. But you don't want to tell us what that higher standard is.
Well, I mean, I think I answered that question earlier when I came back and said that if you are going to reverse HD and require a higher standard, in HD, for example, it might be liquor licenses. In this case, it might be collective bargaining agreement with TEA. That indeed might be a higher standard. I would, of course, point Your Honor out to the arguments we made in our brief concerning prospective versus retrospective.
I understand that, which leads me, we have 5 more minutes, I want you to talk about the remedies. Assuming, but not conceding, I'm not asking to concede, that the HD is either reversed or is applied to you and you don't fit. Let's just assume that. What do we do? What should be done?
You say,
in the alternative, this court should reverse the decision and remand the proceedings to the trial court.
The argument before that, which I'd like to address first, is my request of this court is to apply the rule prospectively.
Okay.
Okay? So I'd like to talk briefly about that.
Right.
And then address what happens if you don't agree with me on that. If you apply the rule prospectively.
Which means not to your case. Okay.
Correct.
As you would define it.
Correct. Then you don't have to worry about a remand or what relief is available.
Okay. If we apply the rule prospectively, what rule should we apply? Does it apply to your case?
the rule you should apply.
No, is there a different standard that you would urge us to adopt prospectively than you are urging now?
If the court is going to reverse HD Enterprises and conclude that more specific notice is required by 19.84 sub 2, the standard should be the standard articulated by the legislature, and that's what's reasonably likely to apprise the public of the subject matter. I don't know how much more specific you can get other than giving examples of that.
And if I could follow up on that very point, there are three notices, or at least three issues at stake in this case, and notices affecting three different topics. For sake of the question only, assume that you prevail on the TEA contract issue as to the master contract. I want to refer to page 4 of the petitioner's brief, and the very last sentence, and I'll read it so you don't have to pull it out. No previous master contract contained a procedure for hiring coaches. That's what's asserted in petitioner's brief. So if I'm looking at this contract, and if I assume that, okay, this is broad enough to cover the TEA master contract, but no TEA master contract has ever dealt with the issue of coaches before, why would this apprise me of notice that the procedure for hiring coaches is going to be discussed?
I see that my time is up. May I answer your
Please.
Question? Thank you.
I agree. We'll probably get another one.
It would apprise the public that there is a collective bargaining agreement. It certainly wouldn't alert the public to every policy and procedure within that collective bargaining agreement, clearly. What it would do is it would tell the public, we're about to come in and ratify a contract. And as Mr. Buswell knows from the letter he signed, the public knew that the school district in this case was negotiating over this proposal. So what it would do is it would signify to the public, if you've got something on your mind that you want to know about that's in or might be in this contract, come to our meeting.
But it has never been in the contract before. That's my point. If it's never been addressed in this fashion, why would notice, even assuming we're dealing with the master contract here, why would notice that you're dealing with a master contract, if we read it that way, be noticed that we're dealing with the new procedure for hiring coaches?
It wouldn't be noticed specifically of the procedure, clearly, because it's not enumerated. If the test, however, is that every new policy or procedure or significantly amended policy or procedure is required, then we're setting a new standard. I mean, clearly, we're going above and beyond what 19.84 sub 2 requires and requiring identification of subtopics or sub-issues. And I would submit, Your Honor, that that's for the legislature to decide.
If the school board had provided all of the specificity that Mr. Buswell seeks, what would have happened on June 1st?
On June 1st, they would have started their meeting, immediately closed it. Maybe I'm not understanding your question.
No,
I apologize.
I mean, was there an opportunity for the public to do anything at that meeting?
No. In theory, they could have attended for the first minute where roll call was made, and then they would have immediately gone into closed session. So, no, as a practical matter, no. The public would not have been at that meeting, and that's why I take great issue with the contention of the petitioner that somehow, because it's a closed session, there's more notice that's required. That's contrary to the purpose behind the open meetings law, which is to allow the public to be informed, and the reality is the public didn't have a right to be there in the first place.
Well, the public always has a right to be at public meetings.
Not when they're closed, Your Honor.
Well, but before they were closed, it was a public meeting.
Sure.
Then why did you give a notice at all?
Because they were also, it appears, considering a high school applicant, and the law, high school principal applicant, the law certainly requires that you identify in your notice when you're going into closed session. The argument of amicus party, and I believe it was the School Board Association, indicating that the notice never had to be posted in the first place with respect to the collective bargaining is one that is actually true under the statutes, but it does appear that the school district was also considering the high school principal applicant, and therefore they were required to post a notice. However, the public can't be a party and participate and hear what's going on. I hope that answers your question.
Chief, may I ask a question? Why doesn't the notice then be sufficient to implicate the hiring of the principals? If I were interested in that issue rather than coaching, does this contemplated closed session for consideration and or action concerning employment negotiations with district personnel pursuant to WIS Stat 1985-1C? Let's say you were going to be, I think you interviewed one principal. Let's say you're going to interview two principals and negotiate salary. Why wouldn't that just cover the principals then rather than any new master contract?
It would cover the principals as well as the master contract.
Well, now when you look at 1C.
1C clearly, as I said earlier, applies.
Therefore, it definitely would cover the principal. Might be better to say principal, but it would cover them.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? You didn't ask what the remedy is if it's not prospective. It's easy to answer if it is prospective.
If it's retroactive application, the remedy would be to remand to the trial court to make inquiry into whatever factors or whatever standard you set forth. I would argue that in no case should the remedy be to void an action that is in and of itself an expired contract, that there are no forfeitures that should be applied, that, in other words, you can't penalize a school district or a municipality for following the law in HD Enterprises, which I think we can all agree we've met regardless of whether you're going to reverse it or not. You can't penalize somebody for following the law. And the law, as of today, until you issue your decision, I think the law is clear that we have complied.
Thank you, counsel. We will now hear from Mr. Buswell. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Justice Butler, the 1986 does have some value for us here today. I think it's a little unfair to the other side because we haven't filed any claim under that. But I think it's instructive for the court here because as you read that statute, I think you can make the conclusion that the legislature intended that collective bargaining agreements would not be treated any different than any other public notice. I think that you can read from that language, and I think that's important for the court today. To that extent, I think it is helpful for you. Justice Bradley, you asked some very good questions about a standard. What can we latch on to? And I think we, in some respects, I've danced around that issue. Let me offer this to you. Doesn't reasonable notice mean, when we're talking about an issue of importance, doesn't reasonable notice mean actual notice? Isn't that what we're really saying? And if you read Judge McAlpine's decision, didn't he touch on that issue when he said that notice equates to knowledge? I think that's an important distinction here because we've talked about today about why not just say what it is? Why not just say it's a TEA contract? Why not just say that you've got a new hiring policy for coaches? I think the answer to that question is they should have.
Counselor, isn't it also possible that subject matter is broad enough to include the TEA contract, but that subject matter doesn't have to be narrowed to, say, the coaching contract because all of the things that were in the TEA contract were subject to ratification? So, I mean, it really depends on how broadly you're going to define the word subject matter. And if we define it as you'd like us to, then I agree with some of the other questions. We have to list the salary. We have to list the working hours. We have to list the class sizes. We have to list all of those things are very important to the public. And just because there's no letter about them makes them no less important to the public. So my concern as I listen to you is trying to figure out how we define subject matter. And I think that's really the crux of it. And when you say actual notice, you're saying actual notice about what your client is interested in. And in the perfect world, I think every governing body would like to give actual notice to the public. I mean, that's who they serve. So
you know, I don't think there's been any allegation here that anybody was trying to keep this a secret. And from the letter that's in the file, clearly your clients knew exactly that this topic was being negotiated with TEA. So my concern is how to set a standard. And having written HD Enterprises, I'm particularly interested in how to set that standard in a way that's going to be more helpful to the public than perhaps our past jurisprudence has been on this issue. And my problem is in defining subject matter, because that's the choice that the legislature made for what we are required to consider when we look at whether there was notice that reasonably apprises the public. It wasn't of every issue in a particular contract, but it was of subject matter. And so my concern is, why do I think that we should say subject matter is the coaching part of the agreement? Why isn't subject matter the entire agreement? Because the board is really going to consider the entire agreement.
2 points on that issue. First point is, and we're sensitive to the concerns you have about having to list every time, every issue that comes up. And that would be burdensome. I agree. Absolutely. But when there's a change, and when that change is a matter of public importance, and people have expressed that interest, then I think it's fair to put the burden on the school district to give that specific notice. Failure to do that, I think, then does not effectuate the goals of 19.81, where you're creating an informed electorate that is aware of the affairs of the government. Presumably, the electorate knows about the master contract from previous negotiations and previous ratifications. I think that's a fair assumption. What they might not know about, and what they did not know about here, is the change, and they should get notice for that.
I think there should be notice of a county board that decides to consider whether to put a stop sign at some intersection within the county. Other than consideration of addition of stop signs, you think it should be delineated at what corner the stop signs will be? Because even though no one may have voiced a concern about it, it might be of concern to someone if the stop sign were by their house or maybe on their way to work, where there could create a traffic jam at 8 o'clock in the morning.
The whatever test that you adopt, I think because by the statute reads reasonable that each case is going to have a case-by-case analysis on whether a specific notice is required. And each trial court is going to have to make a determination on whether that particular issue is of such importance that it requires a specific notice.
Okay.
So I'm sure we all could think of particular items that might seem trivial to one person that
right.
might very well be very important to another person. But that's what trial courts do, and they do it on a daily basis, is to make that case-by-case analysis.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Buswell.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Buswell, and thank you, Ms. Lubinsky, for your arguments. And this is the first time we've had a case that involves notice. So it's of great interest to us, and we will have to wrestle with it with your help. That ends the hearing on 2005 AP 2998, State of Wisconsin versus X-Rail Buswell versus Doma Area School District. The court will take just a few moments in recess so that the students may leave. We're going to bring in the other students. We're going to have approximately a half-hour discussion from the next case. Cut it for lunch and for the discussion with Justice Wilcox. Come back, finish that case, and then do the third case today. That's the agenda. Okay. We are in recess.